Hello and welcome to End Night Frights, the Talk Film Society podcast celebrating the genre films of Manoj Nellyattu Shyamalan, a.k.a. End Night Shyamalan. I'm your host, Manish Mathur, staff writer at Talk Film Society. This episode, I'm talking about M. Night's post-apocalyptic action thriller, After Earth, starring Jaden Smith, Will Smith, Zoe Kravitz, Sophie Okonedo, and Isabel Furman. Joining me today is Cadet Matt Bowes, co-host of Bollywood is for Lovers podcast. How are you?
General Mathur, it's me, Cadet Bowes. My clothes just turned black. It looks cool, but I think it's bad.
Oh my god, this would be so ridiculous. how's it going?
You know, apart from me being in a cold spot here in Edmonton and, you know, freezing to death eventually, it's going okay.
Yeah, it's now we're suddenly getting, you know, like winter. I mean, it's been cold here and there the last couple of weeks, but now it's just like really setting in here in New York.
It's that it's that opening montage of things going really badly on Earth. It's happening.
Yeah, right. Oh man, this movie is a lot to talk about.
It's too real, man.
Yeah, I know. Well, before we get started, I just wanted to ask you, like, do you have a favorite M. Night Shyamalan film in general, or like, what are your thoughts on him?
I kind of fell off the M. Night train around After Earth, I guess. Yeah. I think I'd watched most of them up in the theater. Avatar The Last Airbender was a pretty big deal breaker for me.
Yeah.
But the early ones are fantastic. I'd say Unbreakable is probably my favorite. Sixth Sense and Signs are up there too. But Split was really good, and I'm looking forward to Glass. And Aaron says I should really check out The Visit.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of The Visit as well, so I recommend that movie. In general, for the listeners, that this is a spoiler podcast, so we'll be going through the whole plot, or at least talking about some of the twists and turns of the story, although this movie isn't really like a big twist movie.
Not really.
It's more like a generic action thriller, but you know, if you don't want to know who lives or dies, then press pause, go watch the movie if you dare, and then come back.
It is pretty straightforward, this movie.
You know, it's interesting. Like, I was kind of going into this movie thinking that it wasn't really M. Night's like brainchild. It was more coming from Will Smith. Watching the movie, I did notice some of the recurring themes that M. Night has had in his movies. You know, like, of course, you know, we have the family unit and children and sort of like lack of communication, things like that. And he has had, you know, environmental themes before, notably in The Happening. So this movie does kind of touch on things that M. Night has explored in the past, but I think that for the most part, a lot of the influence behind the camera comes from Will Smith. I mean, he came up with the idea for the film himself and then kind of pitched it to the writer, Gary Whitass, I believe. And then they brought on M. Night Shyamalan to the project. But just in general, Matt, like, what do you think of After Earth? Like, did you at least enjoy parts of it or any of it?
There are some positives. It's not all lines that kind of just drop leadenly. Because Jaden Smith is not a fantastic actor. I thought that the production design was actually kind of cool. It was sort of a taupe and fabric-y future, which you don't see very often. And, you know, it reminded me a bit of Dune, but I'll probably get into that later, because that's a particular hobby horse of mine.
Yeah.
I wonder if maybe I was looking up on his Wikipedia page. It's not quite there. I wonder if maybe Jaden Smith has asthma and this movie is all about him trying to use his inhaler.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because you get a lot of mileage out of these sort of liquid things that he has to inhale to you know, breathe on the Earth atmosphere. So I wondered if this was just kind of like an origin story for his inhaler, and like Will Smith is trying to make it sound cool to, you know, use your inhaler. I don't know. To me, it also feels like it's kind of in a work for hire mode for Shyamalan. He's doing like these kind of adaptations and, you know, blockbusters, but it doesn't have that same sense of you're feeling what this guy's thinking at this time. It's more, I could do that movie. If they paid me, I'll do that.
Right. Yeah, sure. I definitely agree with you. Yeah, for me, this movie felt like a really cool idea and some really interesting elements that just didn't really come together for me. I like the idea of, the dad, Will Smith, being like kind of trapped or unable to move and guiding his son, through survival and getting back to safety. I like that a lot. And I like the idea of going back to Earth after, abandoning it for, I think it was like a thousand years.
So I think it was 1,000 years, yeah.
Yeah. So like this movie originated from, like I said, Will Smith, and he had seen an episode of this TV show, I Shouldn't Be Alive. And in that TV show.
That's a great title for a TV show.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like a reality show or like one of those like more like thriller type nature shows. I'm not really sure what it is. I never even heard of it, but apparently Will Smith's a fan. So they have
that.
Do
you think
viewer.
He watches a lot of TV just sitting around in his mansion? Like, damn,
honestly,
I can't believe that guy's still alive.
But I think he probably does because he's such a like student, or that he's kind of comes off as someone who just likes to consume knowledge and ideas and stuff. So maybe he does watch a lot of TV, but on the show, like this, father and son got into an accident while they were out like camping or hiking. And I think the dad had like broken his leg or something. And the son had to go out into the woods to like get help.
Yeah.
And so that's where this story comes from. I think when they were developing it, they decided to make it a post-apocalyptic kind of science fiction thriller rather than just a straightforward action movie, which honestly, I mean, I it's cool that they adapted it into sci-fi. Like, I think that's interesting, but part of me wonders what that movie would have been like if it had just been, two normal humans and a normal Earth just, like, surviving.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some pretty good movies like that. Was it The Wild, I think, where they had to deal with a bear? Or that is inherently dramatic in a way that us, 1,000 years before the events of this movie, that we can understand. Mm-hmm. Whereas we know that there is a gross invisible monster that's on the ship for some reason. But we're not entirely sure why it's there or what it's doing.
It's interesting how like this movie gets bogged down in its like details and rules and creature designs and whatever, because it's another thing that Shyamalan actually was suffering from in this like really low period between Lady in the Water and this movie. These four movies are just so like just heavy with exposition and rules and mythology and a lot of backstory and stuff. And it's just, it's an interesting part of his career where he just gets so involved in his own mind. And I know a lot of this comes from Will Smith and the previous writer on the film, but it's just another example of Shyamalan just struggling to get it right.
Yeah. I also found this movie at once, it's almost a kid's movie because it is, Jaden going on an adventure, having to deal with problems, but it's also pretty violent in places. I'm thinking specifically the General Cypher Rage, played by Will Smith. He has both of his legs broken in a spaceship accident. And while Jaden is off running to go get the transmitter, he has to kind of like put his body back together. And the scene where he puts a shunt in his leg is pretty gross, actually. So I was wondering, like, who is this aimed at?
I mean, the movie is rated PG-13. So, I guess it's meant for maybe not kids, but like older tweens and teens and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I can't imagine kids or anyone. Well, anyone really, but like, I can't imagine this this movie appealing to anyone in that demographic because it just seems so like boring.
It has a problem that a movie I actually quite like has too, Jupiter Ascending.
Yeah,
where you get this sense that this probably should have been a YA book first. And you could have gotten rid of some of that world building and stuff there. And you could assume that, if the book was popular enough, a lot of your audience would kind of know about Ranger Corps organization and their war against the Ursa, and you wouldn't need to spend the first 5 minutes explaining all that stuff, or you could do it more organically. So, like, it feels like an adaptation of something that never actually happened.
Yeah, and, you know, there were tie-in books and, I think, graphic novels or something. I think there was some media that was released after the movie to help explain it. And so I don't know how popular that stuff was. I mean, I never read it or seen anything about it. But, I agree with you. I think this movie feels like something that should have more of a backstory that you bring into the movie yourself and not have to rely on the movie to give you.
Yeah. I mean, I would have one question I had, why did we lose gun technology in the 1,000 years after leaving Earth? Because that seems like that would have been pretty useful against the Ursa.
Yeah.
Because they can shoot things out of their mouth, but we've only got swords.
Swords and spears. Yeah. I mean, that's like one thing. Like, you would think that technology would progress in the future on weaponry, considering, you know, how much our military controls so much.
Well, and they have a beacon that you can shoot from a planet, and within a couple hours, it looks like they send people to go find you. Like, communications and transportation are fantastic, and looks like healthcare is pretty good in the future too. But you know, when it comes to the war against these horrible aliens, no, you better take a pretty sick sword with you.
So I wanted to talk about actually these monsters or animals or creatures. I mean, they're the only one that really seemed that outwardly threatening is like the main one, the Ursa, which is, I don't know, a bear, lizard type thing.
I don't know, like a big bug
bear? The other creatures that they find on Earth, like, aren't actively hostile.
No.
To me, they kind of seem like they would only attack Jane and Smith, like, if he attacked first, or, I mean, that eagle or whatever. Like, who knows what was going on with that? Because at one point, the eagle is very hostile, and then he's, like, thinks of him as, like, another chick. It was a little strange.
I guess, I mean, he tries to, Jaden tries to defend the nest against some kind of lion beasts, it looks like, and I guess he proved his worth to the eagle. You know, like you would.
I watched the trailer before I watched the movie just to, like, get excited for it, which didn't work, but I was like, okay, well, it's kind of interesting that, like, they're going to be showing Earth where it's, like, an actively hostile place, and, like, all the creatures are just out to, like, attack humans and stuff, but I really didn't get that from the movie.
Yeah, I guess there's a leech that gets stuck on Jaden Smith, and another scene I thought was maybe a bit violent for kids if they were watching. He has to take this, like, this anti-venom that's in his pack, and this is one of the parts I thought that Smith actually did a good job, is that, you know, he's starting to get sick, and he says, his dad's like, oh, you have to take the clear thing first. And he's like, Dad, my eyes don't work. And he's struggling to get this medicine into himself. And eventually he can't even move his hands. So Will Smith is like, okay, just put it over your chest and fall on it. Like, damn, that's dark.
Yeah. This movie is a lot darker than I think it needs to be.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of thought of the Ursa was a metaphor for the main sort of interesting thing in the movie is this idea of ghosting. What did you think of ghosting?
Well, it's hard for me to hear the word ghosting and not think of it in, like, the 21st century term of, like, when someone you're dating just disappears on you and doesn't answer your calls or anything and just, like, cuts off contact.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in the 31st century, they think of it differently, but...
Yeah, but, like, every time they'd be like, oh my god, he's ghosting, or I need to ghost, I was just like, oh my god.
But, like, it's what General Cipher Rage, also, the names are fantastic in the movie, Kitai and Cipher Rage.
But, Shenshi.
Yeah. But what makes Will Smith this amazing warrior in the Ranger Corps is he's essentially able to turn his emotions off.
Yeah.
And... You know, I don't know if the movie outright said this, but the ending fight, it seemed like as soon as you ghosted, as soon as you weren't scared anymore, the Ursa couldn't find you. Like, is it smelling their fear?
Yeah, so I think that it, It detects through pheromones.
Yeah, because they said that, Smith is like, oh, he killed those guys and put them up on spikes to provoke a pheromone reaction in you so it could track you. Right. Which is an interesting idea, but, like, they should just outright say it rather than me having to guess it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there, because it was really, I kind of had to read about the movie a little bit more to understand, like, what that really meant. I thought ghosting was a really cool concept, and I felt that it was something that could have been explored much better. But yeah, in the film, it was really unclear, like, what exactly that means. Because, I mean, I guess people have different degrees of being scared. Like, some people may not be scared, but, like, might go into, like, a battle totally confident, but then can they, like, sense the confidence and attack? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I just didn't understand, like, what exactly that meant on, like, a general level.
Yeah, because this is the thing that I feel ties it to Dune, is that, you've seen Dune, right?
I actually have not, no.
Oh, boy. Okay. You should come on my podcast, Everything About Dune. No, I don't have a Dune podcast. I wish, though.
You should have one.
But in Dune, there's this elite sect of female kind of Jedis, almost, called the Bene Gesserit. And they teach their followers that fear is the mind killer. And if you can block off your mind from fear, then you can do these great feats, much like Cypher Rage does. And that's an interesting thing to think about, especially in a father-son type story, because when you're cutting off fear, you're also kind of cutting off emotion, really. He looks like a robot when he's fighting that monster at the end. And I would say that Will Smith's entire acting in this film is very, you know, repressed and kind of boring to watch, because he doesn't really act that much. He just sits in his chair.
Yeah.
Because he's repressed all of his fear, right? So I think that's really interesting to think about, but not as much interesting to actually watch in the film.
Yeah. I think your point about this being a better as like as a young adult novel or as a graphic novel, I think that kind of thing works really well on the page, but yep. I don't think it works well on screen, especially with an actor like Will Smith, who's known for being very, like, charismatic and engaging and funny and, like, cool.
It's taking the things that we like about him and just throwing them away, and instead he's super repressed, right? It's really weird, and I think this is where some of the comparisons to Scientology have come from.
Okay, good. I'm glad you brought that up, because I had some comments.
Because it feels like, it feels kind of like some sort of religious indoctrination, right? Like, you turn off your fear, you can do these great things, and you will be, you know, rewarded and, like, the best warrior of your people. You know, it makes sense in Dune, which is outright saying that this is the religion of the future. But in this movie, I think it needs a little bit more explanation.
Right. So I read articles from like former Scientologists and as well as from film critics about this movie and its relationship to Scientology. You know, I should mention that Will Smith has not publicly stated that he's a Scientologist. He has said that he's a student of all religions. I think that's a direct quote. There has been some rumors of him and Jada Pinkett, like, donating to Scientology, like, organizations or like, like, there's some, like, some connection there.
Yeah.
So a lot of people have read this movie into being a Scientologist creed, or screed, I guess. I think it's an interesting theory and interpretation. I don't know how much, you know, of course we'll never know how intentional any of it is or if it's just confirmation bias, but
yeah,
the whole idea of, like, turning off your emotions. And one thing that I found that was interesting about that is the idea of Katai having to use his, like, his sense of memory being triggered by, like, what he smells, feels, touches, hears, and, like, as he's trying to, like, navigate his way through. And that's something that they do in, like, this, like, when you're being inducted into Scientology, you go to this, like, session where they try to bring up memories through, like, sensory like sensory analysis. So they're, like, you know, if you're trying to think back to like a certain memory, you're like, okay, what are you seeing? What are you hearing? What are you feeling? What are you smelling? That kind of thing. So like there's some connection there. I mean, it's a little tentative at best. I mean, religion does play into M. Night Shyamalan's career. And I doubt very much that M. Night Shyamalan's a Scientologist because he's, for one thing, he's completely outside of the, you know, LA world.
Yeah.
And also he's like actively Hindu.
Yeah.
Like, I definitely went into a rabbit hole at reading about this, but, and of course the whole idea of Scientology is to like go clear. And I guess you could read that as like, ghosting is kind of like going clear, I guess.
But, it sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it seems, it's kind of an interesting idea. And, you know, like I said, if you want to read into it, there's a lot online for it. But yeah, to me, it's a cool interpretation, but I don't think it's anything too intentional.
I do kind of find the central tenet, which is on the poster, danger is real, fear is a choice. It's kind of, it's a little bit reductive for some people, perhaps with anxiety disorders, who
right.
would love to choose not to be afraid, but literally can't because of their brain. And that kind of ties into that sort of Scientologist feeling about psychiatrists.
Yeah, yeah.
They think that monkeying around in your brain is, you know, the worst thing you could possibly do. And, you know, psychiatrists have been lying to people. You shouldn't take drugs for your brain. And I feel like saying that fear is a choice is kind of in that that realm too. So
yeah, and I mean, you know, M. Night Shyamalan has been criticized in the past for not being sensitive towards, you know, mental illness, things like that.
I saw Split. Yeah, I could kind of see where that's coming from.
So that whole idea might just be another tie-in to the sort of criticism about his, you know, blind spots. But this movie does have a lot of ideas, and I wish it were a better film, you know.
I read that it was supposed to be the first in a trilogy, so maybe we would have learned more about the organization of the Ranger Corps or whatever.
So Matt, this movie was shot by Peter Shushitsky. He is most famous for The Empire Strikes Back. So I just wanted to hear what you thought about the look of the film and the action scenes, stuff like that.
Well, I read that this movie was supposed to be one of the first 4K releases.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some scenes that I think do look pretty cool. There's a bit where Katai has to climb up the side of this volcano to shoot off this device. And it is a pretty striking image, like him kind of being really small and climbing up this big hill. But for a lot of it, I found that Shyamalan was trying to do this sort of really cut up action style that you see in a lot of other blockbusters. And since you're dealing with a gray monster on a gray background and his own suit can turn gray, it was a little bit messed up for me. What did you think?
I thought the look of the film was kind of cool at some points. Definitely like the vistas of Earth and seeing kind of turn it back into this like jungle type thing was pretty cool. And I actually really liked the opening scenes with them at their home planet, Nova Prime. I thought it had a really cool futuristic look. But yeah, I agree with you. At some points, it didn't work for me as well. Especially, yeah, like the gray on gray thing.
I spent too much time trying to figure out where they landed, actually.
Yeah.
I was thinking France. You do see some cave paintings.
Well, that's the other thing is that, okay, so this takes place 1,000 years in the future, but I don't think Earth would completely take over, like nature would completely take over the Earth and all evidence of mankind would be erased like that. Or
yeah.
And I was thinking about like Planet of the Apes and how that ends, you know, like with the famous, spoiler alert, but like the Statue of Liberty. And I was hoping for something like that where he like comes across, you know, like a subway station or some kind of like some evidence of, you know, people living there,
yeah,
even so long ago. But yeah, that was a little disappointing that we didn't really get. I mean, it's called After Earth, but it could have been like, and technically, like any jungle planet, they could have just invented a planet, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't even a surprise that they land on Earth. It's like you find out within the first 10 minutes or so. Like,
yeah, like it's in the trailer.
We're not allowed to go to Earth. It's quarantined because everything there wants to kill us. Like,
yeah.
Oh, okay, well, this is going to be bad then.
Even that doesn't really pay off in the movie either, because I feel like the only thing that's really that dangerous is the Ursa, which they already have. So.
Which they brought with them for what reason exactly?
I don't remember.
I did like the guy who played Torvald on Game of Thrones. Do you know him?
Yeah.
He was explaining to Jaden, like, oh, you're walking towards the thing, you're getting scared now. Now's when you should turn it off. Like, okay, but why is the Ursa on this space flight? That seems like a bad idea.
The film was scored by James Newton Howard. This is their eighth collaboration together and final, too, because he doesn't come back for the next couple films. So I like the score. It had a nice kind of adventurous tone. Not my favorite of, you know, the eight films that he did with M. Night, but it definitely, you know, suited the film and was exciting and sometimes the most interesting thing happening in the movie.
Yeah. I think I did appreciate that once Smith's helicopter parenting style of having, like, drones follow his kid around and he could see from various cameras what he's up to, like, that gets broken at a certain point. And for, like, almost the last 20 minutes of the movie, it's quiet. And you're just hearing that score and, like, him grunting and fighting this monster. So that was a pretty cool part of the movie to kind of let the background shine like that. I did appreciate that.
Yeah, me too. And I appreciate silences, especially with M. Night Shyamalan's films, because I think he uses them pretty effectively. And I agree with you, like, that stretch was pretty exciting. So I take it you weren't a fan of Jaden Smith's performance or Will Smith's performance.
I mean, yeah, I've never seen Jaden Smith in a movie before. I didn't see The Pursuit of Happiness, which he's apparently pretty good in, and I didn't see the new Karate Kid. I've really only known him from Twitter, where he's kind of an oddball. But he apparently emancipated himself from his family when he was 15.
Oh, wow.
And Will bought that for him, like, as a 15th birthday present, like, you're free now. But yeah, I just don't think he's got the chops to do a lot of the really emotional stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, he's also told to act against a bunch of CGI things and...
it's not the easiest kind of performance to give when you're that green as an actor.
And the parts where he was scared and, like, he was poisoned, that sort of thing, I thought that was effective. But there was a scene early on where... he's kind of freaking out for not getting able to join Ranger School at the dinner table. And he says he's going to go to his room. And then his dad's like, no. He's like, permission to go to my room. Permission denied. Which, I mean, if you're dealing with General Dad all day long, maybe you're going to be a little bit subdued. But
it was
kind of crazy. I wondered what their actual relationship was like.
Their relationship, I thought, was... again, could have been really interesting to watch, but yeah, in some ways, even though this movie is a, you know, Will Smith, like, brainchild, I think he and his son were both miscast.
Yes.
Like, the script that he came up with, or the idea, doesn't really play to his strengths, and it doesn't show him in a new light. And, like, this movie, just, like, everything you like about Will Smith is just gone. And I'm just like, why would you create this role for yourself, essentially? That doesn't make any sense to me.
He's got a fantastically popular movie all about him fighting aliens called Independence Day.
Yeah.
And he's, like, the coolest, cockiest fighter pilot in that movie. And then he just does a complete 180 in his, you know, another alien fighting movie. It seems really weird and... you know, I don't think any actor could honestly do it that well if the whole idea of ghosting is that you're just shutting yourself off. Like, that's not acting at a certain point.
And, you know, it seemed like audiences did not want to see Will Smith in this kind of role either. This movie opened on May 31st in 2013. It opened at number 3 at 28 million, which is pretty bad. I mean, especially for... a big budget action blockbuster, like, in the height of summer blockbuster season.
And isn't Will Smith known for is it Memorial Day weekend? It's one of those American holidays, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely, like, famous for all of his movies opening at number one. I think later in an interview with, I believe, Jimmy Kimmel, he said, like, this was his first movie in a long time not to open at number one.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie cost about $130 million and did not make much more money than that. It only made about $61 million total in the U.S. and Canada and Mexico, like on the domestic front. And then it had another $183 million overseas for a total of about $244 million. So, I mean, it made its budget back and a little bit of profit, but I think he was trying to make a big movie for, you know, a big movie star like Will Smith. He had another project running at the time with, like, Bruce Willis, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Bradley Cooper. Like, nothing is really known about that movie. I think it was just in its initial stage, but I think he made After Earth to, like, get a hit movie from Will Smith, and so he could have the collateral to make whatever movie that was. And unfortunately, this movie was a total disaster at the box office.
Well, on paper, it must have sounded good. Like, oh, Will Smith, he's never had a flop. And his son, yeah, sure. As long as we get Will Smith out of this, we can make a hit.
The Karate Kid came out a couple of years before. That was a huge hit. Like, I think the idea was, like, this movie could be a launching pad for Jaden Smith as, you know, successor for his dad. But for some reason, like, all the charm that these Smiths have as a family, like, this movie is just not played to those at all. And I think a movie with a less dour tone could have worked pretty well.
Okay, you want to hear who Jaden reminded me of?
Who?
Tiger Shroff.
Oh my God.
Right? Like, he's good at the physical stuff, but he doesn't really emote like a person. And his dad is trying to launch him, right?
Yeah. For listeners who don't know, Tiger Shroff is the son of Bollywood acting legend Jackie Shroff, who's famous for action movies and being very, like, charismatic on screen. And Tiger Shroff is trying to reach that level. I don't think he's made it quite there yet. Although he's had a few hit movies, I guess.
I don't know if they're really based on the Tiger Shroff persona so much as him just being ludicrously yoked. Like, people like that.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But, like, it is that kind of nepotistic, I'm a movie star. I'm the biggest movie star in the world. My son will also be the biggest movie star in the world, regardless of if he's suited to it.
Yeah, I mean, to their credit, I don't think Jaden Smith has, you know, made a movie after this. And I think he decided that he didn't want to pursue acting, at least at this time in his career. And I think Will Smith has respected that. I think, to the family's credit, they're not really pushing these kids down our throats anymore past, you know, this movie.
Well, this is what happens literally in the end of the movie, is that Jaden's like, I don't want to be in Rangers anymore. I want to hang out with Mom. Like, I don't blame you, kid.
Right, exactly. And you're like, who wouldn't want to hang out with Jada Pinkett Smith?
Yeah, she seems great, and you don't need to be in big flop movies.
Yeah, that's a pretty good ending, I thought.
It is a funny ending, but is it maybe, like, talking too much about their relationship? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, this movie, again, you could read this movie as being a metaphor for this family relationship.
Yeah, and perhaps not the most, obliging metaphor.
Yeah. So, you know, Matt, do you have any final thoughts on the film before we wrap up?
Honestly, I was kind of spending a lot of the time just thinking more about, well, how did this movie get made? What is this propaganda for? Than actually watching the movie, because it's torn between being a, you know, like a R-rated sci-fi actioner, and then also having, like, a very pat kind of childlike idea behind it. So it just seems confused in at least, like, four different ways. And compared to the other Shyamalan films, it really lacks that personal touch that I do like about him. It doesn't have a twist in it. It doesn't... really, it's not like a psychological thriller or anything. It's a real outlier, much like Avatar: The Last Airbender. But at least this time, they're not kind of ruining a TV show that a lot of people like.
Yeah. You know, one thing I forgot to mention actually is that the ads for this movie completely did not mention M. Night Shyamalan at all. Like his name did not appear on the trailer, and which I think is interesting because he was, at the time, famous for having his name above the title, like he was the marquee name. But I think after, you know, The Happening, which was a disaster, and The Last Airbender, which was offensive to fans of the TV show, I think, you know, either he or his, you know, publicist team, they decided to take his name off the movie, at least in the marketing.
Yeah, I'm looking at the poster right now. It doesn't even say in big letters at all, Shyamalan. It's
right.
Just those two guys.
But, yeah, I don't really have any other thoughts. I mean, I think this movie doesn't need to be watched unless you're a completist. Like, I probably would never have watched this movie were it not for this podcast, so...
Me neither.
I apologize that I made you watch it, but I hope you got some enjoyment out of it.
I will forever remember the name General Cipher Rage. I'll say that much.
So, Matt, where can people find you online?
Well, my podcast with... previous guest of yours, Aaron Fraser, is called Bollywood is for Lovers, and you can find it on Apple Podcasts or any of your podcatcher-type devices. And, yeah, we look at Hindi cinema through the eyes of two Canadian film fans who are not Indian ourselves. And you can find me on Twitter at Matt_BOWES.
Yeah, I highly recommend Bollywood is for Lovers. It's a great podcast.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And you can find me on Twitter at TheManish89. That's TheManish89. Also at TalkFilmSociety.com, where you can read my writing there. Tune in next week. We're going to be talking about M. Night's career semi-resurgence with The Visit. So look out for that next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.